open to question. Certainly people are much more hopeful, and certainly women are more hopeful with Ghani as president and Abdullah as his CEO.
We've been speaking with Ann Jones. Her latest book is They Were Soldiers, How the Wounded Return from America's Wars, The Untold Story. Her article, The Missing Women of Afghanistan, can be found at tomdispatch.com. Thank you very much, Ann Jones, for joining us today on Counterspin.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group, based in New York. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. With me is Peter Hart. I'm Janine Jackson. Thank you for listening to Counterspin.
The time is 6 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to announce the opening of Convergence, an audio documentary and sonic artwork by our artist-in-residence, Tessie Word. The opening will be Friday, November 14th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at Civilian Studios, 2210 North Lewis Avenue in Portland. Convergence examines the historical, environmental, and sociological ramifications of living in an imminent ecological disaster area, the tsunami zones of the Oregon coast near the mouth of the Columbia River. Through the use of phonographic recordings, radio transmissions, and original music, Convergence explores and interprets the cultural implications and the psychic terrain of daily life in the tsunami zone. Again, that's Convergence by KBOO Artist-in-Residence Tessie Word, opening Friday, November 14th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at Civilian Studios, 2210 North Lewis Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Triangle Productions run of Five Lesbians Eating Quiche, starting November 28th and ending on December 20th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. This is a comedic look at the window of 1956's Susan B. Anthony Society for the Sisters of Gertrude Stein, as they sit in their renovated community center, sharing secrets as the threat of atomic apocalypse nibbles at their heels. Again, that's the Triangle Productions performance of Five Lesbians Eating Quiche at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. Open daily December 17th through December 24th for the Festival of the Last Minute. Saturday Market offers handmade arts, crafts, and other gifts created by artists from the Pacific Northwest and is located in Southwest Ankeny and Nato Parkway in Waterfront Park. Information at portlandsaturdaymarket.com.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Hello and welcome to Bread and Roses. I'm Ashley Thurstrup and I will be your host for the evening. If you're just tuning in for the first time, Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists offering feminist public affairs programming every Friday at 6 p.m. We give voice to those working for social justice and equity globally and locally. We strive to challenge systems of oppression, all this, and we have fun. Tonight, I'm excited to host an interview with three women involved with Kiva Zip. In a few minutes, I'll be joined in the studio by Kiva Zip fellow Viana Phillips and Kiva Zip trustee Becca Parker. They'll talk about the revolutionary crowdsourcing program, Kiva Zip. They'll tell us about how women entrepreneurs can benefit from this nonprofit program, which offers small business owners interest-free loans through a process called social underwriting that ignores collateral, cash flows, and credit scores. And we'll also hear from Lonnie Jo Lee at the Clinton Street Theater about how the small Kiva Zip loan helped to preserve her landmark movie house, a venue for marginalized filmmaker perspectives and film buffs alike. But first, this feminist news, courtesy of Feminist Majority Foundation.
The secret to the Republican success at the polls Tuesday night was for women to stay home. They did. The 7 Republican senators-elect were supported more by male voters than women. A word of caution. The results on the gender gap are not definitive as yet, because they are often based in models, not actual data, warned Kelly Dittmar, a scholar at the Center for American Women and Politics. She said that her institute will take a close look at the census information released in June to know what percentage of voters female and male, but she does not expect any dramatic differences to appear. Overall, Republican women gained 2 Senate seats and Democrats lost 2, for no net change in the number of women in the U.S. Senate, a total of 20 out of 100 senators. Women's rights advocates were across the board successful, however, on ballot initiatives. In several states, many referendums passed that women activists supported. In Massachusetts, a paid sick leave law passed, and ballot initiatives raising the minimum wage in Arkansas, Nebraska, and Illinois passed as well. In South Dakota and Colorado, anti-abortion ballot initiatives failed, at least in part due to the get-out-the-vote efforts by black women.
And along those lines, the Oklahoma Supreme Court on Tuesday temporarily blocked 2 new abortion restrictions, allowing Oklahoma women to continue to access safe legal abortion while the legal challenge to the state's laws continues in court. The decision by the state's highest court means that Dr. Larry Burns, who provides 44% of all the abortions in the state of Oklahoma, will be allowed to continue offering services. Dr. Burns had been forced to stop providing abortion services after 12 area hospitals refused to extend admitting privileges as required by an Oklahoma law, which took effect on November 1st. The admitting privileges requirement was signed into law by Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon earlier this year. According to the new law, abortion providers must be able to admit patients to a hospital within 30 miles of their clinic. However, a hospital is under no obligation to grant these privileges. Advocates and doctors agree that admitting privileges requirements have no medical purpose and only serve to burden women seeking care. The Oklahoma Supreme Court also temporarily blocked restrictions on medication abortion. And those restrictions, which had also taken effect on November 1st, require doctors to use an outdated FDA protocol for administration of mifepristone. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and the broader medical community have long abandoned the FDA protocol for a new standard of care that requires a lower dosage of the drug. Both cases will now return to a trial court, which will consider the legality of these laws. We're going to go to a local female band, Sally Ford and the Sound Outside, and this is They Told Me. You're listening to Bread and Roses. Stay tuned. Listening to Bread and Roses. I'm your host, Ashley Thurstrup, and tonight we are speaking to women from the program Kiva Zip, which is a nonprofit program which offers small businesses business owners interest-free loans through a process called social underwriting that ignores collateral and credit scores. So I want to help welcome Kiva Zip fellow Viana Phillips and Kiva Zip trustee Becca Parker. So welcome.
Thanks, Ashley.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. So if we could just start it off with one of you giving us an overview of Kiva Zip and how it works.
Sure. So Kiva Zip is an online platform that allows entrepreneurs from all over the country to post their business ideas for the whole world to see. And individual lenders can go online and read about those stories and choose to contribute money toward that project.
Yeah. So this is a really exciting thing about it, is that it's very much a community-based project, but the community being the entire world, which I love about this.
It can really fuel the community and kickstart the community. And people can donate as little as $5 or $25. And it's amazing to see, because people from all over the world come together to support people in their projects. So it's very exciting.
Can you give us an idea of some of the examples of projects that people would, you know, choose to seek out a loan for?
Yeah, so there's really a wide range of different types of projects and industries that are posted on the Kiva Zip website. Some examples of that are agriculture. There's, you know, urban farmers or organic farmers up there. There's lots of people in the food industry and catering, or kind of, you know, a food truck. There's people in entertainment. There's lots of people doing in the arts. Pretty much any industry you can think of, even nonprofits and tech sort of businesses. There's a little bit of everything.
So it's not just for small business owners necessarily. You said nonprofits. This is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's for individuals. Sometimes it's used for people to get their cars fixed so that they can get to work. So it's really to help community members that are not able to access traditional funding to get local funding for small capital that's interest-free. It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. And so much of lending, you know, is based on credit scores, right? And people with average to below average credit scores just keep getting hit over and over with interest rates, higher interest rates, right? If they're able to get a loan at all. So it's hard to imagine how somebody who has a small business who maybe had a bad month or two bad months, how they could keep going if that's the cycle. So can Kiva Zip help someone kind of establish a history then of successful lending if they are borrowing from Kiva Zip and then continuing to repay?
I think, you know, there's lots of reasons that businesses can't get loans from traditional lending sources. You know, one of those is maybe their credit scores or their credit history is not long enough, or, you know, it's had a few bad months or something. You know, there's lots of other reasons too, like the business is too young. Most traditional lending institutions won't lend to businesses within their first year. Or maybe their idea is just too risky, and, you know, there's lots of reasons. And yes, to answer your question, Kiva Zip can work with all those people and, you know, help that business grow and build a stronger set of cash flows and grow to a size and build up their financial statements to a point where they can go back to a traditional lending source and potentially receive traditional funding in the future.
It's phenomenal that all the support that you're offering. Like Becca, you know, a little later in the show, we're going to be hearing a bit from somebody that you mentored in this process. So can you tell us how you got involved in the Kiva Zip program and what you do?
I had a friend that introduced me to Kiva.org, which is a parent organization of Kiva Zip. And I went online and saw the possibilities for loaning to people all across the world. And so I made a personal goal to make a loan in each country. And it was really exciting. One particular nurse in Kajikistan didn't make enough to support her family, and she wanted to buy livestock. So I made a loan to her, and it told the whole story of her progress there. And I was learning about the country and supporting different women. And there's a group of women in Africa, in Kenya, who wanted garden equipment to grow vegetables and sell them at market. So it was really rewarding for me to make loan after loan, and then I would just reinvest it as they got repaid.
And how did you get repaid? How fast?
It seemed to me to be pretty fast. And then each time I would get a check, I would make another loan. So within a year, I had made 30 loans.
With the same pot of money that you'd originally
invested?
With
the same pot of money, yeah. Wow. Yeah, a little bit more. Each time I'd get a check, I would, you know, make one loan. So I felt so good about it. It was so fun. I mean, there was a musician in Israel, and there was a woman who wanted to buy a sewing machine, all kinds of different things, a lot of chickens.
That's neat. I think this is one of the unique aspects of Kiva and Kiva Zip, is this ability to create connections. Because if you're giving money even to a nonprofit organization, it's you don't really necessarily always know where that money is going. But with Kiva Zip, you're hearing the story, you're reading about it, you're learning from them, you're communicating.
Right, and there's a conversation tab too on the website, so the lender and borrower can talk back and forth, and you can see all the lenders all across the world and connect with them if you want to. So it actually becomes a source, if somebody has a product they're selling, whereby somebody might start buying from them locally or across the country. So
yeah. And it's a lot of potential customers too. Some of our borrowers will have over 200 or 300 different lenders contribute to their business, and these are typically lenders who are really excited about what they're doing and the type of business they're creating. So a lot of our borrowers have found this to be a really great opportunity to reach new potential customers and just get the word out about what they're doing to people who are interested.
Mm-hmm. And then tell us about your role as a trustee.
Well, when Kiva Zip came to the U.S. about 3 years ago, and we're offering the zero interest loans, because they were using PayPal, that's the reason they were able to give zero interest loans, is because we had the infrastructure set up. So, and I was following Kiva Zip pretty closely when they came to the U.S., and it was 3 years out when they came to Oregon. And as soon as I found out that they were looking for trustees, I emailed and said I was really excited about the possibility. And I love finding people who want to start businesses or want to expand, and help them with that. Because it's just not available, and we're not available at an affordable price.
And do you see a common spark with people that want to start their own business? I think it's a unique skill or passion that some people have for entrepreneurial.
It is. I think there's a lot of people out there who are excited about something, and it's so fun to work with them when they're passionate about what they're doing. And so I can find out if they're grounded in their idea. And if not, I would probably refer them to Mercy Corps. They've got a 6-week business foundations class. And then from that, they can sign up for their matching grant program, whereby after saving monthly for a year, they come out with $6,000 free money coupled with the $2,000 they've earned, and that's $8,000 there. So if they couple that with a Kiva loan for either $5,000 or $10,000, that can really help get them going.
Absolutely. So you answered one of my next questions. So the loans are typically $5,000 to $10,000, and how much do lenders contribute? The average lender?
It really depends. it depends on the loan, and it depends on, you know, what type of community that lender has. Oftentimes, I think the average is closer to $25, but it's kind of, you know, it's very much an environment where you contribute what you can, and you can contribute as little as $5 to be a part of mm-hmm. an exciting project and share that experience with the entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Lonnie Jo, who we're going to hear from in a few minutes, we interviewed her earlier. She said that it's kind of addicting. Once you start lending, you want to keep lending, and you see all these projects you want to support, and that mm-hmm. sense of community that's mm-hmm. you know, just really builds up and becomes infectious is really mm-hmm. is really cool. You know, Bread and Roses is a feminist news and public affairs show. We're really interested in women and how women are faring, especially after this most recent recession. We know women of color and single mothers were hit the hardest. So can you talk about, you know, how a program like Kiva Zip could really help a woman that's been hit really hard during this recession, especially in the Portland area?
Yeah, I think, you know, women typically are less likely to have established credit histories, and it might be harder for them on average than men to get a loan. And I think that makes Kiva a particularly good option for them when they're trying to start their business. And when we look at our statistics in Oregon, we see that over 50% of the borrowers on our site have been women, which is really exciting to see, because that's so much higher than the overall rate of female entrepreneurship. So it's exciting to see so many women taking advantage of Kiva. And we've also, it's a little early to have any numbers on it, but we've been seeing some exciting trends of female trustees endorsing other female borrowers and mentoring them through their business projects. So I think that because of the way Kiva Zip works, and that it's so built on community and mentorship and gaining support from a broad range of community, it really does appeal to women and mm-hmm. is a great tool for them. And yeah. A lot of the women that we've worked with have been minority women. We work with organizations like Adelante Mujeres and Hacienda Community Development Center, and Hispanic Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce and the Asian Pacific Chamber of Commerce. So through those organizations, we're able to connect and get endorsements for lots of minority women borrowers.
And those are excellent mm-hmm. organizations. So that's wonderful to hear that you're supporting them. So tell us a little bit about social underwriting. And I love this concept. So maybe you can tell us a story about the typical borrower and how they outreach to the community to provide this social underwriting. It's a really great concept.
Sure. So I think that social underwriting is one of the things that makes Kiva Zip most exciting and unique in the way that we do lending. Rather than looking at credit scores and collateral, we recognize that each individual entrepreneur has social capital of their own from their community members and their mentors. And this is worth something, and this is really important, and these are the things that are going to help their business succeed. So we try to leverage technology to get a grasp for the strength of that community and use it to determine eligibility for a Kiva loan. So one of the first steps of the process is to get endorsed by a trustee, which could be an individual like Becca or an organization like Mercy Corps or a Chamber of Commerce or something like that. And after that, you go through what's called a private fundraising period, where you are responsible for gathering support from your own community before you're posted publicly on the Kiva Zip website for everyone to see. So that's kind of how the social underwriting process works, and how people you know, get their community on board with their business idea before it goes public on our site.
And that's how you're vetting them as trustworthy and that their business is
exactly
solid.
And yeah, it's been really exciting to see how strong of an indicator that is, and we've been finding that our repayment rates are very high, and you know, they're just as high as a lot of other microfinance institutions that use these traditional methods by doing our social underwriting process instead.
Very cool. Taking the emphasis off credit scores, which can be quite meaningless, and putting it back where it matters.
Exactly.
We've found that the greater the relationship is between the trustee and the borrowers, the higher the repayment rate is also. So it's really based on community building and relationship, which is really invigorating to see.
Yeah, I think it's really it was really great to hear Lonnie Jo from the Clinton Street Theater. We're going to hear an interview that we did with her earlier about this process and how social underwriting actually was very much affirming to her as well, that her business was important. So we'll hear that now. This is Lonnie Jo Lee of the Clinton Street Theater talking to us about her Kiva Zip loan experience.
Clinton Street Theater is the oldest continuously operating theater in the Northwest. It's actually celebrating 100 years this year. I haven't been there that whole time. My husband and I bought it 2.5 years ago. And since we've owned it, we do a lot of message movies, so a lot of documentaries. We like to support nonprofit organizations in the community and make it really easy for them to have fundraisers. And by being the owners, we can just be as out there and as liberal or progressive as we want to. And it's really great. So even though I can't go out in the world and save it the way I'd really like to, I can help other organizations that are doing that. So we cover a lot of things about justice and women's issues and the environment and, I don't know, just lots of stuff like that. But we also like foreign films. I think it's really important that we see that we aren't so myopic in this country. I mean, we are in this country, and I think it's important that we understand that there's a lot of different people in the world, and all of them live, you know, interesting and fascinating lives and some very difficult lives, and that we just are more aware of our place, that we're just this little we're just a little piece of a great big world. So we do a lot of foreign, we do rep films. We are probably best known for the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which has been playing there every Saturday night since April 1978.
Wow.
That's a huge labor of love. I wasn't sure I could do that at the beginning, but Rocky Horror really does save lives, and it deserves its own program. But mm-hmm. it has a unique place in the community too. So yeah, that's kind of we're just all over the place. But I think we have really interesting program. We don't play your standard Hollywood fare ever. We don't do first run or second run, even of the art house films, because those are still a lot of times big studio films. I do tons of independent films by local independent filmmakers, and now we're kind of being known as a place for independent filmmakers from around the country to come. You know, they put their film in their van, with their little stack of DVDs, and they are traveling around the country to share their story, and they end up at the Clinton Street Theater.
That's really cool. So you're one of the only theaters that operates like this, in this manner of really bringing a voice to marginalized filmmakers in some ways.
Right, because even, a big nonprofit art house still has to pay for its expensive building, and they have a ton of people on staff with big salaries. And so because we're just kind of small and guerrilla-like, I guess, in a way, we can do that. We can afford to give a voice to more people.
So were you always a patron of Clinton Street Theater? How did you get involved with them, and why did you decide that you and your husband wanted to buy it and take it on?
No, we've been in Portland now for 13 years, so I guess that kind of makes us sort of long-term. But no, I'd attended things at the Clinton, but, in the past it didn't have this kind of focus on the kind of programming that we do. I am a documentary filmmaker, and it's super expensive to enter festivals or to pay for screenings, or and a lot of the film industry is still very male-focused. It's like a big boys' club, and so the men who run festivals, they look at stories from a man's point of view, and women's storytelling is very different. And that's what I discovered when I was making my own films, my own documentaries, and seeing the work of other women filmmakers. So I'd been out of work we had a company that we owned and sold, and I didn't have to work, which was, you know, lovely for a while. But then when I wanted to go back to work, I was over 50 and I'd been out of the workforce for 10 years and I couldn't even get an interview anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was a little frustrating. So I did a lot of volunteer work and, you know, went to film school, and even that became very frustrating as a woman filmmaker. Mm-hmm. So when the Clinton Street was up on Craigslist, you know, I just thought, oh my goodness, that sounds like fun. And it is really fun. I mean, it's a ton of work. I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's my life now. I don't get to make films anymore. So
yeah, well, you know, Bread and Roses is a feminist news and public affairs show, and so I appreciate you bringing up your own personal history with kind of working in a male-dominated field and mm-hmm. the boys' club. And you know, your story is really inspirational because you took the reins, you know, back in a lot of ways, and you decided to show what you wanted to. And your husband, it's probably a joint right. decision-making process.
Well, mostly all the programming is pretty much me. I get to do that. So from the very beginning, I started doing women's programming. I started Real Feminism that I do. It had been with In Other Words as a partner, but now it's going with POW Fest, Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival. And I always look for films that are by women filmmakers, or they have women issues. So I've got this really great one coming up this month called The Amazing Catfish, and it's a Mexican film, but it's a first-time woman director. And it's two women that are the protagonist in the movie. And it's, so, I mean, I look at things like the Bechdel test about whether, you know, it does have women characters that are, you know, have more than a couple of lines about something other than men or their relationships with men, because women's voices just aren't heard very much, mm-hmm. not by the women characters in films, and the women's films aren't being, you know, distributed the way they would. So if you look through my program, I don't have to wait to have a festival to show women's films. I try to do it all through the year.
Nice. They're not just kind of ghettoized in a women's festival or something.
Right, exactly. Like, yeah. And I really appreciate the fact that there is a POW Fest, you know, that there is a Portland Women's Festival or the Siren Nation Festival. But I, because I am very lucky that I get to own my own theater, I can show women's mm-hmm. films when I want to. Yeah. And I can choose a female director from Mexico. It's her first feature. But it's an amazing film, and mm-hmm. it's got really amazingly strong female characters. So, I'm really lucky that I can do that. And Real Feminism is still going on. I'm able to support Women Make Movies, which is a wonderful organization that's been around since the early 70s that supports women financially, too, and in distribution of their films. And so that's usually where the Real Feminism films come from every month. But just check the schedule. There's always women's films.
That's excellent. Tonight, we're taking a look and focusing really on a nonprofit organization or a funding institution called Kiva Zip, which we know you took advantage of. And, you know, it's a great program for really focusing on helping and boosting up women entrepreneurs and women small businesses. So during the process of purchasing the Clinton Street Theater, you turned to Kiva Zip for a small crowdsource loan. Can you tell us about that process and, you know, why you didn't just attempt to apply for traditional lending?
Well, I'd already borrowed. We took out a second mortgage on our house to pay for the theater business, and my husband works a real job, so he gets a salary, so that takes care of our own financial situation. So mainly the theater needs to pay for itself. But when we bought the theater, it was a real mess. I mean, there was nothing that worked. We had one speaker. The heating and air conditioning hadn't been fixed. There was a big rip in the screen. The projector had this terrible bulb that was messed up, and it just threw this big yellow spot on the screen. There was no sound. I mean, it was really, really awful, and it was dirty, and it just hadn't been taken care of. There was a hole, 2 feet across in one of the bathrooms that was just covered with duct tape and no subfloor. I mean, it was just really a mess. So anyway, so the theater has been taken care of. It's been able to purchase its own, 11 new speakers and a new surround sound system and a new sound processor and a new screen. My husband actually installed it. It's a good thing we've gone to Burning Man and we know how to use zip ties. But we have, you know, we've been able to do that, but there are other things that I would like to do aesthetically that I didn't feel like I could get a regular loan for, because also I still owe a lot of money on my home equity line of credit. So when one of my, you know, theater goers, patrons, Becca, approached me about the Kiva Zip loan, it was just like, really? Really? I could qualify for a, you know, $5,000? Because what I really wanted to do was fix the lobby. We have, if you've ever been to the Clinton Street Theater, we have this really tiny lobby, and the concession counter is not functional. I mean, it holds our candy, and we can make popcorn, and we have soda, and we have a little tiny refrigerator for beer, but it things can get super clogged there, and it just can be like not good, you know. So I really wanted to design a new concession counter that could be more functional, but I just didn't think that I would be able to do that. So I've just been kind of saving pennies, you know, to be able to do that someday down the line. I mean, our first goals were just to try to make the quality of our, you know, experience, the screen and the projector and the sound and all of that, so people could really enjoy the movies correctly. I mean, you know, the way they're meant to be seen. So I just, all the aesthetic stuff, I didn't think, you know, I would just wait. That was a lower priority. So Becca told me about this, and I, you know, wrote up my personal story, because they care a lot about you as a person too, not just about your business. So that was, you know, that was really interesting to know that they cared about what I thought and felt, and why I was doing what I was doing in terms of running, you know, owning and running the Clinton Street Theater. So, yeah, I qualified for a $5,000 loan, and then the first step is to have members of your own circle, you know, friends and family or whatever, all agree to give something. And what's really wonderful about Kiva is that you can give as little as $5, so it makes it so easy for anybody to just participate. And so I had enough people, like, right away within the first day or two, you know, to put me out to the larger Kiva world. And I mean, really, I just would get, like, all, like, emotional every time I would go on my online and see who had contributed to my loan, because there are people in Taiwan and Norway and Australia and all over the United States and lots in Canada. I mean, I ended up having 176 people who contributed to my $5,000 loan from all over the world. And it was just really wonderful the way that people would say, I really like what you're doing. I wish we had this here. You know, I just wish there was something like this in our town, or, you know, we had this, a venue like this, but it just closed. And, you know, and so they just, you know, it just felt like, even in my little tiny corner of Portland, Oregon, people thought, well, yeah, good for you.
They wanted to be a part of the guerrilla theater movement.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, there is a place where, you know, independent filmmakers can go, or where women can have a voice, or, you know, we're going to see films about the environment, or, you know.
And how quickly did this happen? Did you reach the $5,000 goal?
It happened pretty fast. I mean, you're given around 45 days, and I think mine came through in less than a month.
Nice.
Yeah so it was just like too amazing to be, and the money was funded to me right away, and we haven't had a chance. We've done all the research now. I mean, we can't just close the theater and just start building something in the lobby. So all the money's in a savings account right now, so I don't touch it, and it's all there. And there's a way on the Kiva loan zip page where you can communicate with your loaners, the lenders, and, you know, I'm the borrower. And so I would send them pictures of, you know, the lobby, and I'd send them my weekly newsletter, and I would just tell them about what I was doing, so that, and then let, you know, encourage them to read through and check the website and stuff like that, so they would have a good sense of what it was. And it's actually, though, very addicting. When I first learned about Kiva and started looking at it, I mean, I just wanted to start giving, like, loaning money to everybody. So I had to make myself my own little, like, limit, you know. And so I made that $100 that I've been able to give to a lot of different loans, and I've been able to do that too. So I gave to someone here in Portland, a woman who is here from Mexico City and has a food cart. I gave to a guy here in Portland who makes hot sauce from heirloom chilies, you know, chilies that have never been heard. And so, and I even bought his hot sauce and it's so good. And then I've given to a woman jewelry maker in San Francisco and family farms. I mean, and then the thing that's really nice is now people have paid me back and now I have more money to go and invest in other things. Oh. So I think I'll just always keep that little bit of, you know, that $100 just in circulation, giving, continuing to give, you know, to loan to other businesses, because I just think it's really remarkable. You know, there's money that can be accessed by people who are nonprofits, but you know, there's something really special about people who have skin in the game. You know, like this is my business. This is, you know,
I put my house up to buy this. And tell us about why you chose to incorporate as an LLC rather than a 501c3 nonprofit.
Well, you know, I think that nonprofits do have their place, and I think there's some things that couldn't be done maybe without nonprofit status. But, you know, I'm just I'm a business owner now, and I like being able to determine how my business is going to be run. And when you become a nonprofit, then you have a board, and then there are certain things you have to do and certain things you have to, hoops you have to jump through. And I just feel like that I want to be able to say what I think and what I feel, and I want to program the way I want to. And maybe I am being selfish, but it's okay. It's my business. Mm-hmm. And I put my house up for it. Mm-hmm. And I just don't want to have anybody saying, oh, well, maybe you should, you know, be more fair and, you know, and show all sides of the story, when it's like, nope, I just think that's, you know, that side is wrong. And I'm not going to share. I'm not going to tell that side because I don't like it.
Side gets told every single day through lots of mass media.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So why can't I? And I really like the fact that, you know, that I can be, you know, kind of like the, you know, just run my business and do it the way I think it needs to be done. It's sort of like being that, what do they call it, the good dictator, you know, what is that kind of thing, you know, if like that would be the perfect world, if people really had all the best intentions in the world. And I feel like I do, I care a lot about my community. I love Portland. Since we've lived here, I've never been happier. Mm-hmm. And I care a lot about the causes I believe in. And so I can put Yes on 92 on my marquee. If I were a nonprofit, I probably couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, so
yeah. No, it's an interesting perspective, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. And lastly, I wanted to ask you about you mentioned Becca, your trustee, Rebecca Parker. So what are some of the ways that she mentored you throughout this process?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't have even known about Kiva if Becca hadn't come and said, hey, I think you'd really be good for this. And then she actually had me over for breakfast, and it's really great smoothie, and just spent a lot of time with me and helped me fill out my application. And then she also kept encouraging me through the process with just emails. And I mean, she was really wonderful, because I do live my job, so I work a lot. I work a lot, and she was really great to help me understand how important it is that I take care of myself too, and that was really invaluable. That she just was, it wasn't just like, yeah, you need this money because you can do this, but it was like, yeah, you need this money, but you also need to, like, you know, treat yourself every once in a while. You need to like do some self care, and so I mean, she was just looking at me. It just not just from the business perspective, but as a whole person. And so I really, really am very grateful for the time that she spent with me. And since then, she's still like, you know, checks in and just to see how things are going. And she's a special person for sure. Yeah.
That's great. And so, you know, it's amazing to hear your story and how this small $5,000 loan was so life changing in some ways, you know, for you. I think, It kind of puts faith back in humanity and
it really helped me feel validated, you know, when I had, I mean, because I, you know, I do all this stuff, and I, you know, when people say, yeah, you're doing a good job, but I mean, just to have it, to have to, it forced me to like really quantify what I am doing. And I mean, I have had that all along, but really to write it down, you know, to write down my story and to talk about the theater and what I'm trying to accomplish, and then to put that out to the world, I mean, the global community, and then to have that validated by so many people and just and say, yeah, you are doing something important, and this is great for your community, but I think it's great for the larger community mm-hmm. too, that this place even exists, even if it's just here in Portland. Mm-hmm. It's important that this is here and it stays here. I mean, it just was extremely validating, and it's just like that kind of, yeah, mm-hmm. keep on keeping on kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. We've been talking to Lonnie Jo Lee from the Clinton Street Theater. She's the owner of the theater. It's a small, independent, lovely film house here in Portland, and she's also a borrower of the Kiva Zip program and also now a lender. So thank you so much for being on Bread and Roses.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You are listening to Bread and Roses, and I am your host, Ashley Thurstrup, and I'm joined tonight by some women of Kiva Zip. It's Viana and Becca, and we're so grateful to have them in the studio to tell us about this really wonderful program for women, small business owners and men, and entrepreneurs of all sorts. So thanks again for being here. That was a really lovely testimonial to the power of Kiva Zip. And I wanted to just give kudos to Becca, who's in the studio tonight as the trustee of Lonnie Jo and really guiding her through that process. So can you share anything else from your perspective about what that was like to really, see this transformation from the beginning to the end of her process with the loan?
Thank you very much. It was really fun working with Lonnie Jo, and it's fun. It's been fun working with all of the borrowers that I've worked with, and helping them take the next step for what they're passionate about. It opens doors, and it is stabilizing for them. I remember one couple musicians' van had broken down, and they needed funds to fix that. And so their Kiva loan came in the day their van got finished, and I called the woman up, and she was crying, and she said, you know, most of the time we're out there telling people to keep the faith, you know, that the universe supports them. But she said this was our time to really see the universe supporting us. She said people from all over the world lent to us. Mm-hmm. And it was so rewarding for me that to see people blossom like that and feel invigorated. And mm-hmm. that's what makes me want to be a trustee. Mm-hmm.
The stories of people's journeys and where they're at with their businesses. I've looked on the website now, and I'm soon to be a lender here. It's really amazing to see, you know, just where people have come. And Lonnie Jo talked about, you know, people all over the world, Japan and Australia, supporting her business because they believe that, there should be venues for small, independent, marginalized voices and films to be played, and that's becoming rarer and rarer. And I think there's other stories about that where we're seeing corporations take over and people are rising up and don't want that to happen. And this is a great platform for any of our listeners out there who want to help support people that are doing this great work and have these small businesses, but maybe don't have the time to like get into it themselves, but they have time to lend as little as $25, like you were saying earlier. And you were also sharing a great story earlier, Viana, about a single mom. Can you share that story for our listeners?
Yeah, for sure. One of the things we've been seeing more and more in the early stages of Kiva Zip, as it is, we've only been around for 2 years, but we've been noticing some patterns of these great mentorship relationships like Becca has with Lonnie, where women are being trustees and playing that role of a mentor for other women who are looking for ways to grow their business ideas. So one of these women, her name is Maria, and she's an urban farmer, and she her farm focuses on sustainable land use. She works with edible forestry and some medicinal herbs and beekeeping and honey production. Her farm is, you know, doing well, but as you know, it's really tough being a farmer. So one of the things that she wanted to do to further invest in her business and provide another source of income was to create kind of popsicles out of some of the tea that she made out of her medicinal herbs. So so she got a Kiva loan for this, went to one of the trustees and got a $5,000 loan, and her business continued to grow. So she paid back her $5,000 loan and reapplied, and this time was eligible for a $10,000 loan. So she got her $10,000 loan, and she's a single mother, and, you know, she had a local community who was supporting her. And one of the other women in her community, whose name was Juliet, was, you know, also a single mother and needed some money for her business. And she couldn't qualify for a traditional loan because she had some, she just didn't qualify on paperwork as you know, 80% of small business owners don't. So since Maria had already repaid her loan, she was actually eligible to endorse her friend and play that role of a business mentor for her, which is just really exciting to see those sorts of things can start to happen on Kiva Zip after a couple years of being around. And I think, you know, it's an example of the opportunity out there for females to mentor one another in their business ventures.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The repayment rate, this is something I'm really interested in, because my understanding is that Kiva Zip has a very high repayment rate, maybe even more higher than some traditional lending sources. So can you talk about that?
Yeah, so the repayment rate on Kiva Zip is about 90% right now, which is definitely competitive with a lot of traditional or other micro loan sources you could go to, which we're really excited about. We're still kind of in the early stages, so and experimenting with this whole social underwriting process. But I think one thing that it does indicate is that, you know, social underwriting does work. And I think that's just so exciting to know that, you know, how meaningful our relationships and mentorship can actually be when you look at the numbers.
I think one thing that I have always been impressed with was the idea of microfunding and where that originally came from. And I think that the idea for Kiva Zip came from the East Indian professor that started microlending by loaning $27 to women in the slums of Bangladesh. And with that, they would buy the raw materials to make bamboo chairs. And that man got the Nobel Prize in economics for the idea and went on to form Grameen Bank.
Yes.
So those are the same principles that Kiva and Kiva Zip adopted. And now it is people helping people, which is...
Yeah, and I mean, it completely makes sense, because if you're not paying back your loan, you're letting down your community versus just some nameless, faceless corporate monster, right? So,
exactly. And I think that really helps encourage our borrowers to, you know, stay accountable to their lenders and send them updates on what's going on in their business. And, you know, the lenders understand that some of these business ideas are risky and they still want to be a part of them. So as long as, you know, we have that open communication channel and we encourage, you know, the borrowers to give regular updates to their community of lenders so that they're really transparent with what's going on.
Excellent. And what about the naysayers that say or that question this or think that maybe some people could be fraudulent? Does that ever happen?
I think that, you know, we're a platform that's built on trust, and we've seen that be very effective, and that, you know, when you've brought in 15 members from your community to support you on something, you don't really want to turn around and not repay them the money that they gave you to support your idea. You know, that being said, you know, there's the odd case of fraud, but, you know, we do review each individual loan and do our due diligence to make sure that that, you know, people are using the money for what they say they will.
And could someone come in and just decide to completely fund a loan, like with one borrower or one lender? I'm sorry. So say I had $5,000 and I want to just apply it directly to one person. Does that happen, or is it always split up amongst hundreds of people?
I mean, that's possible. I think it's usually split up amongst a fair number of people because the amounts are pretty large, and people are more interested in, you know, contributing smaller amounts to more than one loan.
I found that Kiva Zip has really been accountable with the loans that are approved. And that I, as a trustee, too, do due diligence. So I look at how well-grounded the plan is. I mean, is there a business plan? What steps have been taken? Has it been thought out how much an individual needs to earn to repay the loan? So I'm good about looking at whether or not there's a reasonable chance that this loan's going to be repaid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really important role that our trustees play, and another reason that they're just such an important part of making Kiva Zip work.
So how can our listeners hear more about Kiva Zip or learn more, and how can they get in contact with you?
Well, if you're interested in just learning more or exploring or potentially lending $5 or more to a borrower, I'd encourage you to go to the website, which is zip.kiva.org. So zip.kiva.org. And if you want to come out and learn more about it in person, we'll be at the Moreland Selwood Library on November 24th at 6:00. So would be happy to talk to you then.
You can also, if you would like to connect with me, the local trustee, Becca, one of the local trustees, you could email me at bubblylikeabrook@gmail.com.
Great. If you're just tuning in or you've tuned in recently, this is Bread and Roses, and I'm your host, Ashley Thurstrup, and we've been talking with Viana Phillips and Becca Parker of Kiva Zip about a fairly new program that's based on crowdsourcing and person-to-person lending for small business owners. And the loans are up to $5,000 initially, and then eventually $10,000 loans at a 0% interest rate. And with no regards to credit history, it's all about kind of your personal connections and business plan and how you can really vet yourself. It's a wonderful program, so please do check it out at zip.kiva.org. I want to thank Lonnie Jo Lee of Clinton Street Theater for her contribution to tonight's program as well. And also wanted to let all of our listeners know about an amazing film series called Real Feminism. And it's on the fourth Monday of every month at 7 p.m. at Clinton Street Theater. And Real Feminism is a film series highlighting movies directed by women and genderqueer individuals that have a feminist perspective or address feminist topics. So on Monday, November 24th at 7 p.m., they'll be showing LaDonna Harris, Indian 101, from the Comanche filmmaker Juliana Branham. It chronicles the life of Comanche activist and national civil rights leader LaDonna Harris and the role that she's played in Native and mainstream America history since the 60s. In this new style documentary, Branham, the great niece of Harris, celebrates her life and the personal struggles that led her to become a voice for Native people and her contemporary work to strengthen and rebuild Indigenous communities and train emerging Native leaders around the world. That's Monday, November 24th at 7 p.m. You've been listening to Bread and Roses, and if you're interested in providing story ideas, listening to past shows, or getting involved with us as radio producers or engineers, please visit our website at www.kboo.fm/breadandroses. You can also like us on Facebook. You can find us at kbo.breadandroses/Facebook. I want to thank our engineer, Leanne Kronz, and thank my guests for the evening, Becca Parker and Viana Phillips. Thanks for being here.
Welcome.
And again, you can find more information about Kiva Zip at zip.kiva.org. You've been listening to Bread and Roses. Stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio, and have a good evening.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Marching, so many women dead. We cry through our city, their ancient call for bread. Our stomachs are empty, but our hearts are hungry too.
It's a minute after the top of the hour. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7. Coming up next is a Hard Knock Radio for your Friday, so stay tuned to KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor My Name is Rachel Corey, a play based on the diaries and letters of an activist killed in 2003 when she was acting as a human shield between an Israeli bulldozer and a Palestinian home. My Name is Rachel Corey shows on Sunday, November 9th at 7 p.m.